Well, they did it again, Brandon. The Dodgers did it again. One of the top free agents out there, international free agents out there, is now a Los Angeles Dodger. Tell me if you've heard this story before. We're back. It's Deferred Collusion. It's me, Jesse. We're joined, as always, by Brandon Bullinger, the king of the South Bay. What's up, buddy? How are you?
My captain. Oh, my captain. That's not how that goes. Jess, it's good to see you. Oh, my gosh. I just got more World Series drip.
Wow.
I don't know if you can read that. It says Championes, dude, in Espanol. I think so. You can see I got a little, does that say 8-time world champions, dude? Wow. It sure does, Jess. It's great to be back at the home that Deferred Collusion built. Another interesting Dodger signing. They are proving why they are the best run organization in baseball. And that's not just me glazing our franchise. Hyesung Kim, dude, 3 years, $22 million, 28-year-old KBO star.
26.
Oops, I read that wrong. Just a measly 326, 383, 458 with four triples, 11 homers, 75 ribbies, 90 runs in 120 games last season. Jess, is this a needle mover for you for this Dodgers franchise? And does it just feel like, oh, if the Dodgers signed him, like, yeah, he's going to be a breakout star for Rookie of the Year next year or something? What do you think?
No, this feels almost like a little bit of a move where the Dodgers recognize some strengths and weaknesses of last year's team that just won the championship, incidentally. I don't know if you knew that. I think this is sort of a reflective of having a guy like Tommy Edman on the team and what an impact he had to go out and get a guy like this who, you know, the super utility guy, the Chris Taylors of the world that the Dodgers have loved to have on their roster.
Coveted, if you will.
So I want to get into it. I just want to sort of do a little aside here because obviously he's from the Korean League and the KBO. And yesterday morning, I was getting some work done and I was binge watching Squid Game. You know, one of
I've heard of it.
Korea.
And
the news pops up on my phone about it, right? So for the past, like, for 6 hours after that, it was like me looking at like Squid Game links and looking at stuff about Hyesung Kim. And so right now, my algorithm is just all fucking like K-pop and, you know, like, just, hey, did you know that the guy who plays Thanos in Squid Game was a real rapper? Like, you know,
I didn't know that.
Have you watched season 2?
No, I have not.
Gotcha. So there's in the new season, there's a rapper character, and I guess he's an actual K-pop rapper.
That's cool.
He's pretty famous. Yeah. So anyway, so that's been my algorithm the past 24 hours, just all Korean stuff. And I've actually been digesting it. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, Jess, why don't I give you a little free Korean lesson while we're here on air? Yeah. Or maybe I should wait till the end, dude, of the pod. So you should like and subscribe for that Korean lesson at the end of the freaking episode, dude. I'm just joking. I'll give it to you now. I'll give you a bonus Korean phrase at the end of the episode. How about that? But this one, Dodger fans, get ready. You can throw it out to your boy, Hyesung Kim, when he starts making some plays, hitting some bops. But saranghae, that means I love you in Korean. So let's say it together, Jesse. Sa-dang-hae.
Sa-dang-hae?
Yep. Okay. Great. There you go.
That's
Korea.
That's what I do when I'm chirping at the Dodgers. Yeah. I tell them I love you.
Yeah, you go, sa-dang-hae. Well, when you root them on, you know, right. I've seen you break down and cry over a milestone of Clayton Kershaw here or there. Yeah. Jess, can I actually share with you, now that we're in a new year, Happy New Year, by the way, 2025.
Happy New Year to all of our subscribers as well.
Yeah, we love you guys. Here's a fun little segue and a bit of sports history, but one of my favorite sporting accomplishments that I've ever watched was in 2014. It wasn't a baseball game, but it was an NHL game. Jesse, we were at a bar in Culver City watching your Los Angeles Kings win the Stanley Cup, and I have this vivid memory of it just like time expiring. It's over. The bar's going crazy, and I look over, and you're on the phone, and you're like, Dad! And it just, like, we did it. It was so cool. One of my like favorite sports moments ever. I just wanted to share that with you. Never forgot. Well,
that's fun. My dad watches this podcast, so he'll be happy to hear that one. He'll be happy to.
Mr. Rowe, how are you, sir?
Yep, there you go. He's going to be thrilled. He's probably going to send me a text about it as soon as he watches this. I do remember that night. That was a great night, and we've watched a few together, Brandon. We've watched a few together, so I'm happy to share that with you. But
yeah,
we got a little sidetracked here. I want to get back just a little bit to what this means for the team now, because the automatic when you go out and you sign a super utility guy like this who is high contact. Not a lot of power, but I do think that the Dodgers probably feel like they can tap into some extra power. That's what they do. They did that with Taylor and the Swing Kings, hiring them and bringing them over into the Dodgers, front office or into their staff. What's going to happen now with Gavin Lux, Chris Taylor, Kike Hernandez, because those are the guys that have sort of filled this role. Lux is obviously just a second baseman at this point. And there are reports that Mookie Betts is going to play shortstop or second base. So it's sort of, my head is spinning when they made this move, because I'm like, well, where the fuck is he going to play?
Yeah.
How are they going to use him? Is he just going to be a platoon role? Is he going to be a bench piece? Because the Dodgers use everybody. They don't have somebody sitting idly by. So I think this means that they are moving Lux. I do think this means they're trying to move Lux, and that Taylor is – I don't want to say a DFA candidate, but a potential trade chip, like a money salary swap sort of deal. I don't know. I don't see how they have a place on this team, especially if they want to bring in Dalton Rushing into the mix to maybe play some outfield, be a backup catcher. There's just not enough room on the roster.
Jesse, to your point about that, talking about moves that have already happened, Diego Cartaya, once a untouchable prize prospect for the Dodgers, has been DFA'd, right?
Yeah.
To make room for Kim. So that does, I mean, even to add more layers to the points you're just making so eloquently, I may add. But Miggy Rowe, what's his role going to be? Muncy's obviously going to be holding down third. Shohei is going to be your DH. So that's a bat you don't want to miss out on. And yeah, Miggy Rowe had some great production last year, but when you throw in Edmund, and now you got Michael Conforto, who's going to be probably taking a bulk share in left field. You know, Teo's officially re-signed in right. So a lot of that outfield versatility that you were going to have is like, okay, well, I don't think they signed Kim to be much of an outfielder. It seems like he's going to be a middle infielder.
He can play left field. He also was a third baseman for a time. He was a shortstop full-time in 2021, but primarily he's been a second baseman the past few years.
Yeah. So I feel like this means that maybe it's the end of an era in LA for Chris Taylor. I feel like he's the odd man out, even more so than Lux. Lux almost makes more sense to me as like a mid-season trade deadline piece to move. And then you have that veteran in Miggy Rowe to maybe take his place. But then again, let's say Lux gets off to a hot start. I could see them maybe switching to like a Miguel Rojas, trade him for some prospects, make some room, whatever. Not that I'm saying I want any of this to happen, but just kind of how Brandon Gomes and the whole Dodgers regime, Andrew Friedman, has just worked. It seems like they've been three steps ahead on everything. So it does seem like there's some room being made for a Dalton Rushing. And now with Kim being added, this team has so many layers, dude. It feels like it's damn dragon scale armor or something. No weak points. There's all these overlapping. I can't get a blade in there, dude.
No, dude.
How do I take this juggernaut down?
And then look, obviously this isn't like a guy that's guaranteed to be like a part of the everyday lineup, but he could be, and it almost feels a little bit like Gavin Lux insurance. Like, you might be right that they're going to be giving Lux maybe like a little bit more runway, because that last year was his first year back after an ACL tear. He did show signs in the second half of starting to – his OPS was like almost like 900 in the second half. So
wow.
I think that he showed some signs of improvement. You know, took a little bit of a regression September and October, but I think like July and August he was really, really, really good.
And, yeah.
It might just be Lux insurance, like in case Lux doesn't look good, that they can maybe move off of him and then
Yeah.
Came in there. And I think it's just as much versatility as you can have is a good problem to have. If like, even if it might not make a lot of sense right off the jump. But I think what they're doing is they're really, because they can, they have Teo, Freddie, Mookie, Shohei, Smith, guys with a lot of power. They are placing a premium on whoever is on the bench or whoever is like the versatile players need to be high contact guys. Cause I think Chris Taylor kind of became a low contact guy, high pop, low contact. And I think they're sort of moving. Look at what just happened last year about putting the ball in play, how important that is. I think they're having a little bit of like a shift in their philosophy there where they're really starting to prioritize it by they keep Rojas, they re-sign Edmund, they sign Hyesung Kim. This, they are really prioritizing contact guys for their bench pieces. And I think that Edmund's not going to be a bench piece, but you get kind of get my point here. And I think that's sort of their philosophy of this, and I'm really into it because I think that when you have a lineup that just runs as deep as the Dodgers do, if you have guys that can put the ball in play around the guys like Shohei and Freddie Mookie, it just makes that it just makes the process of getting through it so much harder. And by the way, really for a guy that doesn't have a lot of power, really good on base guy, Hyesung Kim. He averaged like I think he averaged
42 steals or something last season,
something like that. For a guy that doesn't hit. That's awesome.
Yeah. 42 steals, I believe he had last season, which is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, shit, if he can get 25 to like 30 in the show, that'd be insane. Yeah. And again, Jess, I think what we're even glossing over too, which was so evident in the World Series, but was just base running.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers have a lot of high acumen base running, which was not the case in the beginning of the season. We saw Shohei run into a few outs. Trying to stretch stuff, it felt like some other sloppiness, but it really cleaned up. And you know, this is just another guy with a base running tool that is becoming more and more sought after in today's game with the bigger bags, pickoff attempt limitations. It's really freeing up movement on the bag. So, like you said, contact is actually kind of at a premium right now, and I think maybe the Dodgers are getting a little head on a new trend, you know, just to buttress my point, you know, through three true outcomes a few seasons ago was the hitting philosophy. Now it's not so much, right? It's really interesting how fast baseball moves. But just speaking of baseball and such an international game, Tommy Tanks was actually teammates with Kim back in 2022. I saw you added that in the notes for the Kiwam Heroes. I did not know that. I did not know Tomster was in K-Town for a little bit.
I think he went to Korea, then Japan. It was Japan, then Korea. I forget what order he went. But, yeah, they were teammates. And apparently, you know, oddly enough, you know, Shohei was apparently kind of integral in getting him over here because apparently – Shohei signed off on the guy, really liked him, put the signing into his Instagram stories when the Dodgers made the announcement. Shohei put it into his Instagram stories. So he was seemingly pretty excited about this. And apparently the Padres were in on him because they've been looking for a replacement for Hyesung Kim, who is a better power version of Hyesung Kim. But like the point I wanted to make about all this is, obviously, you know, you still see baseball fans getting upset about all of this because it's the Dodgers and they're taking all the free agents. And yeah, this is another example of this, the international signing that could have gone to any team, but they went to the Dodgers, probably because they chose the Dodgers, less about the Dodgers outbidding everybody.
Yeah.
This is, as a baseball fan, this is what you want, right? This is the perfect. This is everything you could ask for from a front office and from your team, is to just constantly replenish the team. The Dodgers could have stood by their laurels and said, hey, we have a damn good team going into the offseason. We just won the World Series. We could take our foot off the gas, maybe shed a little payroll here and there. You know, we could and still compete for a championship. But no, what they said was, no, we actually have this window now. Let's step on the gas. Let's maximize the window. And it's just a mutually beneficial relationship between fan and ownership where the owners keep putting money in and the fans keep rewarding it and vice versa. The fans show up. If you spend, the owners spend if you show up, and it keeps happening, and it's like, you can't get mad at that if you're a baseball fan, man.
There is a very happy symbiosis going on right now in LA. And we talked about this a little bit too. LA's really competing for your entertainment dollars, right? There's always another play. There's always another show. There's always another concert, always another team, right? Clippers got the Intuit Dome. There's SoFi, you know, obviously not everything overlaps, but I mean, dude, the Lakers have been the biggest show in town for a long time. You know, they got King James, whoop-de-whoop. Dodgers are the king of the castle right now. I mean, hottest name on the block. And like you said, it's not because they're outbidding everybody. Yeah, it helps when you can flex your financial muscle, right? Like the Cleveland Guardians were never going to offer Shohei $700 million, right?
Yeah.
But if you're one of those few franchises that can offer that player $700 million, don't you want to see them then go out and find the best ancillary players on the globe, right? Like, this is a global sport. That's why we call it the World Series. I know people like to stick their nose up at it and go, wait, well, how many teams were from other countries? It's like, shut up, dude, just Canada. But
right.
You tell my boys in the DR that this ain't the fucking World Series, brother.
Calm down, Noah Lyles.
fucking disrespectful Noah.
I know. Yeah, I mean, it's true. And you just... I don't know. You just can't. I don't know. I could go through this all day, basically. But
I love it. Jess, what kind of impact do you feel that this signing has on Roki Sasaki, dude? The hottest kid at the dance. Everybody wants his number. Well, 20 teams want his number. Well, 10 have not reached out.
So, I mean, I think what you were saying about the front office, I think part of the reason why they're trying to sign guys like Ha-Sung Kim is because they've already monopolized a lot of the Japanese market, right? With guys like Shohei and Yamamoto. And then it's like, hey, we have Korean fans in here. We can maybe get some Korean brand deals coming in. And then so you look at a guy like Sasaki and you're thinking, well, what does he really have to gain by joining the Dodgers at this point, right? So the only thing that I think it hurts in terms of Sasaki is in terms of like what sort of – like, how does he stand out amongst all of this where he could bring the Japanese market to another team and really kind of be a standalone, right?
Yeah.
But I actually don't think it hurts at all. I think it's just only going to help his decision if he decides to go to the Dodgers. I don't think it hurts his market in any way. I think more so it is kind of strengthening the Dodgers' position here of where would you want to go?
Yeah.
Because there's only like a few teams that are really showing consistent investment into their fans and into their players.
Yeah, and the experience and everything. Yeah.
So it's like he could have met with a bunch of different. Apparently, he met with like 20, or there were like 20 interested.
There was 20. Yeah, there was 20 that were in. And he requested that no players be involved. Which, you know, a lot of people that were like, oh, there's already this handshake agreement with the Dodgers and Sasaki and. Yeah. You know, Shohei and Yamamoto are out there. But that kind of shows that, like, hey, I'm looking for development. You know, his words, not mine.
Well, do you think that has to do with, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Like, I wonder if that has to do with maybe his arm a little bit, because it showed that his velocity started to take a little dip. And so, because apparently what Joel Wolf said was that he's not prioritizing teams with Japanese players on it. Now, that could just be like a leveraging point to like get, you know,
just trying to get more people interested, you know, whatever, you know, more guys in the dance,
believing that there's a handshake agreement. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, totally.
And that he's like you said, he's prioritizing teams where he could maybe like get the most out of his arm health, and also the most out of his abilities. And I think that when he's doing that, you know, he's basically saying, I'm concerned that, like, I might not have a lot of, like, longevity where I stand right now. Like, I might not be able to throw 100 miles an hour forever. I think there might be some arm stuff going on here, is what I'm trying to say.
I agree.
And I think that, like, he's weighing that decision about where is the best place to go for, like, ensuring that I can have long-term success
with
my velo dips.
Well, Jess, let me ask you real quick. And just, I mean, do you think that's a sign of the times of like current pitchers, right? Just kind of the ethos of being a pitcher today, like velocity, velocity, velocity. Do you think maybe he's, like you said, in on something? Or do you think he maybe knows, even if it's not an injury thing, that this just simply isn't sustainable as you get older? And you look at maybe guys like, you know, like a Tyler Rogers, right? Sidearm, submarine thrower, a part of that pretty crazy 2021 Giants team that won 107 games. That was 2021, right?
Yeah.
I think he averaged like 83 miles an hour on his stuff, but just great movement. So, you know, like Kyle Hendricks is another guy, like a stuff pitcher that comes to mind that's had a long-term career. And Sasaki being young, you know, you're not limiting yourself to, oh, I'm going to have a 5-year career. I'm going to have a 10-year career. He's probably looking like, no, I'm going to pitch till I'm 40. I'm looking at Verlander. I'm looking at Scherzer, and I'm going to the MLB a couple years early because I want to be the best in the world. Just like my former teammate, Shohei Ohtani, just like my former teammate, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who I just watched throw the World Series, you know, have one of the best games of his career, game two, just allowing one hit to Soto, that bomb to right field. But Jess, I feel like there is a competitive edge to these players coming out of Asia, where it feels like there is a little extra oomph to their purpose, right? That it's not just to put them on the map, but to put their country, their programs, their, you know, like on the map as like the best in the world, not just professional baseball players, but the best in the world. And it gets me fired up. And like the way teams are rolling out the red carpet for this guy, how they did for Yamamoto and Shohei now before him, it's telling, dude. It's an exciting time for baseball as a global sport.
Well, I think here's what I would say is to people who think that he has less to gain by going to the Dodgers where there's already a Japanese presence there, because like you're mentioning that there's so much more to gain now for a Japanese player coming over to the States. I think that when you join something like Shohei and Yamamoto, I actually think that makes you more marketable, because then you're like this three-headed dragon, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
Of like them, they are going to be marketed as like the three aces, the three Japanese aces of the Dodgers, which is something that's never happened before. So that he could get to be part of something that is so uniquely Japanese, that would be so big. It would be huge. It would be, you know, like
totally.
It would be like Japanese. The best pitching staff in baseball is spearheaded by three Japanese stars. That would be a huge deal for the nation of Japan. Like, that would just be an absolutely massive deal. I think it would mean way more than it would be if like Sasaki went to like the Padres and anchored a very good staff on a very good team.
You know, totally.
I just think it would be so much. You'd be like the fucking Japanese Beatles of baseball. You know what I mean? You'd just be, it would be huge.
Wow. I like that. I like that.
I don't know. That's how I see it. I'm a Dodger fan. I'm maybe a little bit biased, but if I'm looking at it from like a marketability standpoint, I think that's just way more marketable than like, oh, this kid is really good, because he's always going to be in Shohei and Yamamoto's shadow anyway. Like, whether or not he's with the Dodgers, he's always going to be in their shadow. He's always going to be compared to them.
Ooh.
So I don't know.
So that is interesting, because that, you know, now that goes to personality type. Rather, that's the fun of just guessing. But what if that's right. What he wants to do is he wants to be like, no, fuck these guys. I'm going to get out of their shadow. I'm going to cast the shadow. That's exciting too. But Jess, I feel like, just as a layman, I kind of look at it like, hey, if you're an actor and you're interested in, let's say, 20 different movies, right? They're all kind of similar movies, and their end goal is pretty much the same, right? That being the 20 teams that were offering for Sasaki. But it's like, what if one of those teams, or casts, if you will, have, I don't know, like Viggo Mortensen is, you know, the star, and I don't know, maybe like Samwise Gamgee is going to be played by freaking Rudy himself, or you know, like I'm using the cast of Lord of the Rings as an example. Yeah, but like you're not going to not join the cast of Lord of the Rings because Ian McClellan's on it, dude. Like, I don't want to be overshadowed by the star. It's like, right. No, dude, maybe I'm going to go learn a thing or two, and my career is going to fucking vault from here.
That's right. No, you're going to be remembered more for being part of the greater team.
You know, exactamente, dude.
And also another thing, though, I will say this. If there was one downside,
they destroyed that one ring, by the way, dude. They did it. They accomplished their goal.
I mean, have you seen the Clerks, by the way, Clerks 2, when he describes Lord of the Rings versus Star Wars? That's one of my favorite bits, by the way. I love that fucking
thing. You're my cinema guy, dude. Sorry, I wanted to throw that out there for you.
If he is concerned about arm health, I will say this. Maybe the Dodgers aren't the best place to go just because they've had a lot of arm injuries the past year. And Bueller didn't look great coming off of his second Tommy John. We still don't know how Shohei's going to look.
You're right.
You know, that's neither here nor there. Well, that remains to be seen. Walker Bueller, former Dodger, which is just such a painful thing to say.
Ugh, I miss you a lot.
Bregman to the Red Sox. Would that upset you as a Dodger fan if that was actually a real thing?
No, it wouldn't, because we've moved on. You've got to move on at some point. We don't forget, you fucking cheaters.
Yeah.
But if Walker can move on and be buddies with Bregman. They're both Kentucky guys, Lexington, I think.
Yeah, they
I didn't know this, but Walker Bueller is big into horses. He's a horse racing guy, and Bregman is a co-owner of one of their horses together. They own a racehorse together. Bregman, I forget where he went to college, but I think it was pretty close. I think him and Bueller played college ball together somewhere before they ended up wherever they ended up, Vanderbilt. And did Bregman play at LSU? I don't remember.
Yeah, no, he was LSU. Yeah, I'm pretty
sure.
He
was LSU, right? Yeah, so they're buddies. So he's trying to get Boston or a little help getting Bregman over there, I should say. I think that would be a huge pickup. I don't know. It kind of feels like a fit for me. I don't get too excited about Bregman, though. I really don't think his numbers are that good ever since the cheating scandal. Maybe he adds a veteran presence.
Oh,
but I still kind of like him more in Detroit, joining AJ Hinch.
His numbers, like his OPS, has dropped a lot since 2019, which is when the scandal broke. Now, is that a confidence thing? Is there more to that? We don't
maybe know. He just needs a change of scenery, you know?
But I do think the short porch in the Crawford boxes in left field in Houston played a big part of his power numbers. And I think in Boston, the same thing could work for him because of obviously the monster.
Yeah. So
I think that's like the best fit from a numbers standpoint is Boston. If not Houston, it would be Boston. Detroit, I think, is like his power numbers would go to die.
I think.
I would like to see him there, but I think his power numbers would just.
I think that the best fit for him, and I agree about the power numbers, it will die in Detroit. But I think in Detroit, he has the ability to be a centerpiece role with a familiar coach, somebody he's won the World Series with, even if it was cheating. They still celebrated, even though Hinch was on the record as saying, I'm against it. He still celebrated that trophy. But like I said, people don't forget.
Cora's the coach of the Red Sox, though, so like it's the two teams that want him happen to be Hinch and Cora.
Yeah, the only
Cora, so.
Exactly the only two coaches that will take a cheater. But my point is, I know I'm being kind of just a jerk, but my point is, I think that the best fit for him is Detroit, and I think that's why he hasn't signed is because he's waiting for Boston to meet a number. And I think that it's probably a little bit higher than this tentative to spend regime in Boston is willing to go, especially like you highlighted somebody whose numbers, OPS, power, slugging have all dramatically dropped over the five seasons, half decade now since the cheating scandal, bang, bang on your drum, came to light.
He's still been good. He's still been good.
Still
He's
been
just
good.
Not what he was. Like 5 years ago, if you'd asked me, I would have said, oh, this guy's going to get,
he's a top three third baseman in baseball. Yeah.
I'm thinking more he's in like the 6 year range right now. And he's probably looking for like that 7 year deal from Boston. But, as of right now, we're going to burn through these last few topics here. But as of right now, the top free agents remaining are Bregman, Pete Alonso, Roky Sasaki, Jack Flaherty. I would say those are the big four at the moment. Flaherty might be like B level in that range. Whose market do you think has been kind of like hurt and helped the most at this point? Whose market do you think is hurting the most right now? Do you think it's Alonso?
Dude, you literally just stole it. Words out of my mouth.
Yeah.
The person most hurt right now is Pete Alonso. I don't know if anybody else expected Christian Walker to sign before Pete Alonso or Paul Goldschmidt to be traded before Pete Alonso signs. But it sounds like there is a huge chasm between what Polar Pete wants in a contract around like $180 million. I think he's looking to, he wants 6+ years. The Mets offered him 3 at $90, about half of what he's looking for. But I don't think there's a team that is willing to pay more than the Mets for Polar Pete. And I don't think he's one good season away from getting the bag.
Right.
We can throw out a few. We talked about the Astros being a good spot for him. Maybe it made sense for them to spend on him since they gave Hader, what, like $90 million to relieve. It's like, all right, well, if you really, you know, value one statistic stats, like, for example, first base offensive production, sure, I could see them locking him up. But it appears that the big holdup for everybody has been his defense. And it's not like he's non-athletic, but I think you look at him, what he's done, and what he's going to do, I think a lot of teams are comping him as like a Ryan Howard, except I believe Ryan Howard was an MVP one year. Polar Pete, I don't think has even finished in the top 10 for MVP voting in his career. Fact check me on that, dude. I will be called out wrong.
You know,
but
you got me thinking here because, you know, the Astros obviously gave Christian Walker the 3-year deal, but that's basically because Walker is, what is he, 34 or something?
No. I think he's like 35, 36.
So I'm deciding, I want to compare Walker and Alonso here because did you mention the 3-year deal that's what the Mets are offering him?
33. He's 33. Sorry, I was tripping.
Yeah. So the
Mets, they offered Alonso a 3-year deal.
Right, or that's the reporting, right? And then Alonso probably were looking for something like whatever. 6 years.
I forget who reported it, but yeah, it was around 180 to 200 mil is what he was looking at. He's looking for a big boy deal, a Bregman deal.
Compare, because I think Alonso is hurt by the fact that he was, he came storming out the gates. In his rookie year, he hit like 52 homers or whatever it was.
Yeah,
just had an amazing stretch out the gate, and you know, but if you look at Christian Walker versus Pete Alonso, Christian Walker over the last 3 years has 11.4 WAR. Pete Alonso has 10.2 WAR. Alonso does have better numbers, like overall, but like because of Christian Walker's defense, he's got a premium on the WAR. And but if you kind of look at the stats, like their stats are very, very similar. Christian Walker, 250, 332 on base, 481 slug, 813 OPS, 123 OPS plus. Pete Alonso, 243 average, 333 on base, 493 slug, 826 OPS. That's only 13-point difference. He's only got a 131 OPS plus where Walker has a 123 OPS plus. So he's looking for basically like double the contract of a Christian Walker, but he's basically just like a slightly better version of Christian Walker without the defense. And it's like, so basically like it's a wash.
Yeah.
And so if you're Pete Alonso, you're kind of like, what, how, I don't know if any team in baseball is going to want to give him a 6 or 7 year deal.
Like, I don't.
Why would you want to do that? You're paying Christian Walker 6 year deal, like 200 million. Fuck no.
Yeah.
That's
fuck
basically
that.
What this would be. So I don't know. It's just, you're basically paying cause he's going to hit a few extra homers.
Yeah. So now, Jess, let me tell you, sounds like the Angels are in on Alonso, and I just think that makes so much sense. If there's anybody that's going to pay like $150 million for like an 8-year contract on Alonso, you got the corner infield of fucking Tony Rendon and Polar Pete out in Anaheim, I would go see him. I would go play hooky one day, buy a $35 ticket, and just get my rally monkey out and just watch two guys not athletically swing at some balls.
One team that's going to give Pete Alonso a 6 or 7 year deal, it would be the Anaheim Angels.
It'd be the Lowell Angels, dude. Jess, that leads me to one of our last topics of the day, but frustrating teams, but not just any frustrating teams, just the top five most frustrating off seasons right now.
Well,
my shouts out to these.
We were bringing up this topic.
Go for it.
Charlie Morton signed a 1 year deal, $15 million with the Baltimore Orioles. And I think, you know, he's obviously replacing Corbin Burns, right? So
whoops.
Oh, there you go again with your, your high tech.
Sorry,
driving camera. They have to be one of the more frustrating teams, losing Corbin Burns, losing Anthony Santander, and replacing him with Charlie Morton and Tyler O'Neill. You know,
bummer.
A team that was like a World Series pick last year. Like, everybody's picking that team to go to the World Series, and now this is where they're at. Like, are they a wild card team? You know, that question.
Yeah.
So they have to be one of the top five most frustrating teams. So who are yours? Who are your top five most frustrating teams right now?
Jess, this is probably going to surprise some people because I'm a Dodger fan, but I think number one has to be the Padres for me. Such a great season last year. It feels like they've been tinkering every year, and the collection of talent has been unreal. And they've had some stretches where they've been obviously the best team in baseball. Look at last season just after the fucking All-Star break. I think they had a couple crazy runs in 21 and 22 as well, notably knocking off the Dodgers in 22 in the playoffs. But yeah, cutting payroll.
2020 and 22. Yeah.
Yeah. Cutting payroll. I know a lot of it has to do with the death of their owner. Little unsure of what the future is going to hold in that regard. So I get it. But for having a pretty active GM being this pat on movement, it's telling, and it's worrisome. I know there's a lot of chatter about Luis Arraez, another batting title for a guy that ranked 100th in, I think, in OPS, or was it might have been slugging. So it's like, what do you do with him? Tanner Scott walks in the offseason. He wants some crazy money too.
No, I think that's like a kind of a good thing though, because they do have a very good bullpen still. That like, I don't think they needed Tanner Scott to be like. I think that they actually like, that's good for them to get that off of there, but that they don't have to worry about re-signing him. I think what hurts them more is that I do think that they were in on Hyesung Kim.
Yes.
Dodgers snagging him, that hurts them because I do think they were hoping to move Luis Arraez.
Yeah.
And then they could just replace that style of player with a guy like Hyesung Kim. Might not get you 300 average every year like Arraez does, but it's sort of like you can approximate what Arraez does a little bit.
So. Definitely. Jess, another team that's pissing me the fuck off. So we've covered the Orioles. We've covered the Padres. The Seattle Mariners.
Yeah.
What are we doing? The best rotation in baseball, and you can't find a guy to hit the ball, like, at all. Like, how Anthony Santander is not a Seattle Mariner already trips me out.
Alonso.
Yeah, even Alonso. They need to fix that batter's eye. They need to hire whoever the Guardians hired to work on their outfield.
They need a wind tunnel.
Yeah, but it's like, what are we doing, dude? You got young Julio, and it's like, I don't know. I don't know what we're doing. You had a Rosarena at the deadline and JT, Justin Turner last year.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're not power guys. They're kind of contact guys. Randy, if you're in the playoffs, will hit nukes all day. But it's just frustrating. We've harped on their ownership before about being stuck at what was their win window? Like 85, 86?
85 wins or something like that. 84 wins.
Yeah. So just trying to be a C average student. So I don't know. I'm frustrated as hell with them, Jess. I don't know. What would you like to see them do? Maybe get Bregman?
I just don't think they're gonna give out the money for a guy like Bregman. And apparently though, like that batter's eye thing is a real deal. Like that might be like free agents not wanting to come because they're worried they're going to see their numbers plummet. Because like Julio Rodriguez's numbers last year just completely tanked.
Mm.
And, you know, he needs some protection in that lineup. Like he needs somebody hitting behind him that's a threat. And they just don't really have it. I agree. Like the Mariners, they have this window with this incredible pitching staff. If you can't maximize it with some bats, you're kind of just – it's just going to waste. It's pretty unfortunate. I think that the I might have a little bit of a saucy take here, maybe a little Ooh. Bit of like just getting the haters riled up. I'm a little disappointed in the Mets. And I know Ooh. What you're thinking, like, oh, dude, you signed – Juan Soto, you signed Sean Manaea, you signed Frankie Montas. They've been active. It's like, yeah, okay, they made the biggest splash of the offseason, no question about it, right? But since then, they just brought back Sean Manaea, who is basically approximates the same thing, who was like a career 4 ERA guy that, like, he's not an ace. I like
him. A lateral movement.
He's not an ace. He's a great, like, number three.
Ooh.
But there was Corbin Burns and Max Fried out there. There was Blake Snell out there. Like, I think that if they were in on Soto, they should have also. Your window starts right now, dude. Like, your window starts right now. And I just don't know if that pitching staff with Kodai Senga at the top is good enough to really do much. Now, look, they're still going to be a good team, but I just don't know if they have enough for me to, like, really start taking them seriously yet, because I do think they were a little bit, like, lucky to make the NLCS. I'll put it that way. I still think they're a good team, but I think that they kind of just hit the stride at the right time. It's going to be hard to replicate what they did, even with
Soto. Yeah.
So that's just a weird little hot take that I have.
Yeah. I'm actually really, really dig what you're saying. I agree. And then, you know, these last two are just kind of the same for me. The Twins, I don't know what the fuck they're doing. I don't, you know, they've been flirting with trying to be.
The Padres gave out that fucking contract to Xander Bogaerts that they're regretting. The Twins are like, they're trying to get off Carlos Correa any way that they fucking can. They don't.
Who would have thought that guy would be a fucking just cancer? I mean, yeah, he's good on the field when he's healthy. But, I mean, dude, the guy signed $200-300 million deals that offseason, you know, with the Giants and the fucking Mets, and it didn't stick. So that's kind of almost an honorable mention to me, but they're there. Twins fans, he deserved better. And then the last one are the fucking Guardians. And this one actually kind of pisses me off. You let a pitcher and your first baseman go that were fucking crucial to your success in the division, the playoffs. And you've done nothing to fucking back that up. Like, what are we doing? J-Ram deserves better. The city deserves better. So it's frustrating as fuck.
They signed Carlos Santana.
You know, neat. But not needle movers. And then just, you know, because we're kind of running out of time, just to power through. Blue Jays, obviously. I know we're at like seven teams now, but Blue Jays super fucking frustrated. Can't get anybody to take their money.
Yeah, that's
shouts out Josh Donaldson and Russell Martin for suing them and getting their fucking money back. I don't know if maybe that soured the market for them, but they're trying. They're trying, but still frustrating. And then on the flop side of fucking trying, the Miami Marlins spending $0 in this offseason going into the 2025 season. So Marlin fans, I guess you're going to be going just to save that money to go to a University of Miami game, go to a Florida State game, go check out something other than their shitty product
The Marlins don't even deserve to be on the most frustrating list just because there was no expectations for them to do anything other than this anyway. So it's like, we can't say that it's been frustrating.
Derek Jeter never quit anything in his life, and he quit the fucking Miami Marlins ownership as quick as he fucking could. Shouts out Kim Ang. Hope you're doing good, sister.
Yeah.
Jess, the last thing that I wanted to talk to you about was just a little bit of a gear grinder for me. And that is SportsCenter of ESPN fame failing big stream media fucking sportscasters giving their top plays of the 2024 athletic season, you know, all sports, ranking Freddie Freeman's walk-off grand slam in the 10th inning of game 1 of the World Series as the 6th most important or noteworthy play of the year. Jess, how fucking dumb is that shit, brother?
Yeah, I mean,
Not even in the top five.
I don't even know what the top five was, but I'm pretty sure one of them was like a dunk, if I'm not mistaken. But either way.
Exactly. Like, you're at a loss.
A gold medal winning performance or something like that, like maybe I could put above it. But just in terms of what do you want in sports if it's not for like last minute heroics to win the big game? You know,
right.
That's what sports is all about. And baseball is one of the top three sports. That should have at least been top three. If you have a walk-off home run in the World Series, it should at least be top three. It's one of the top three American sports in the world. So it should at least be top three.
Yeah, 100%. Has to be top three.
I don't know.
Has to be top three. I think it's mad disrespectful. It's literally what kids imagine doing. You know, walk off. You're just walking down the street. You find a stick. Oh, bases juice, two outs, bottom of the ninth. I mean, even though it's the 10th. But it's one of those things where I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get how people judge these things. It's like our boy Cam Newton thinking the WNBA is going to be fucking surpassing the MLB in viewership in the next two decades. There's just this weird gray spot that it feels like for people that aren't fans of the sport. They just think nobody's watching. It's like, you couldn't be more wrong, fella.
Yeah,
like handing out 700 millo like it's going out of fucking style.
I think that like that. I watched that highlight on TikTok, MLB's TikTok account. I think it had like 3 million likes on it or something. I mean, it was
crazy.
Really a viral moment. So
crazy.
I don't know. It's one of those things where I'm like, okay, you know what? I just don't take it. I guess I don't take it that seriously because I'm like, if you're a sporting account and you rank that as number six of the year, then I'm kind of just like, I don't know how much you, if you don't care about, if that's how little you care about baseball, then like, I just kind of just, I'm not going to take it seriously anyway.
Yeah. Cause it's like, okay, what could be higher in a baseball game? You know, game seven walk off, would that get it in the top three? Like get the fuck out of here. But Jess, it leads me to there.
The finals suck too. So if anything from the NBA finals was in there, I don't want to fucking hear it. The NBA.
Right, dude. They could suck me right up, dude. But Jess, before we get out of here, I owe you one more Korean phrase. So thank you to all of our friends, fans, and listeners for making it this far. Please remember, deferred collusion is coming at you at a multitude of media facets. As always, right here on YouTube, please like, subscribe, comment, share. It really, really helps us grow the channel. Spotify, Apple Music, we are on there. And as always, Instagram, TikTok. We're trying to get Twitter going and maybe Blue Sky. So if those are your preferred modes of social mediaing, we'll meet you over there. But Jess, you know what I say to anybody hating on our favorite game of baseball, who doesn't have Freddie Freeman's walk-off Grand Slam is obviously the number one sports moment of the year. In Korean, I would tell them, Hajima. And Hajima just means shut up. So, Jess, feel free. Take that. This has been Deferred Collusion. I'm Brandon Bollinger. This is my host, my with the most, my partner in crime, Jesse James Outman, Revealed Rowe, King of Crespi.
It's time for us to Hajima, Brandon.
Whoa, dude. Tip of the cap. That's multilingual. That's the kind of global view of sports that you get here.
We're a global brand.
The Deferred Collusion. We're a couple of global guys.
Yeah, dude.
Thank you guys so much. We love you. Jess, I love you. This has been a blast. We'll see you guys next time. Keep screwing it in, brother. We'll see you soon.
And go watch Squid Game. Peace.
I have not watched it yet.
Yeah, gotta watch it. It's fun.
Gotta watch it.